saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of bagged concrete and mortar mixes, great for any project. Whether you're pouring a walkway, a concrete slab, or setting a post, view our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise. Good to have you in here live on this Wednesday edition of the show. Derek Mason from Vanderbilt at 7:30 this morning. 1 hour from now, another D-Mace dissection as we go all behind the All-22. 85 will give us a couple of plays from the All-22 that stood out to him. Sean Henry from the Predators, Adam Vingan as well. So a loaded show this morning. Preds win last night 3-0 over the Blackhawks. But I was watching the World Series last night. Now, I am emotionally invested in the World Series because I am financially committed to the World Series.
Let's say you are financially invested.
Which side were you financially invested in last night?
Not last night. I did not bet on the game, but I did bet the Astros for the series.
That's right. Okay.
But this will show my objectivity because I thought the Nationals got hosed last night by the umpire. So late in the game, Astros are losing 3-2.
It's the seventh inning, right?
Seventh inning. Trey Turner hits a comebacker to the pitcher. He busts it out of the batter's box. Now, his left leg is a little bit on the grass, so he's inside to the left of the foul line on the dirt.
Inside the baseline.
Right leg in the dirt, left leg in the grass. But within the final few feet, as he gets closer to first base and the ball is being tossed over to the first baseman, he veers back into what I thought was a relatively safe space where I would not rule him out for interference. He touches the bag. It would have been, and the ball got past the first baseman. So it would have been second and third, Nationals, runners in scoring position, nobody out, up 3-2, chance to blow the game open.
Which they did anyway.
Which they ended up doing anyway. But instead, the umpire, after a lengthy review, rule him out. So now it's one out, and the guy that would have been at third has to go back to first base. And I thought the officiating was terrible. I bet on the Astros, so I'm praying that it works out in my favor. Although I think in reality, being objective, I thought the Nationals got robbed. Martinez gets tossed during the commercial break, and I'm sitting back and I'm thinking, between the umpiring, I mean, this was a closeout game in the World Series. Then you factor in the college football officiating in the SEC, the NFL refs. I just feel like now we're at an all-time low with referees and umpires.
I'm really torn on this. I think we're at an all-time high of visual evidence.
True. Very true.
I think that's where we are, because by the letter of the law, he's running inside the baseline. So by the letter of the law, it's you can't do that. So if he's, you know, if it's a judgment call and it's a 50-50 call and he's kind of inside and he's kind of not, then I don't really have a I don't think it's that big of a missed call if it's sort of a 50-50 judgment call, right? And if he's running inside the baseline, you can't do that. And if that's something you'd call in the first inning or the second inning, then you need to call it in the seventh inning. Luckily, it didn't affect the outcome of the game, to your point. We can argue about this is also the same thing that's going on with the college athletes getting paid or autographs or, you know, a lot of different things. There's a difference between arguing about whether or not it was called correctly and whether or not the rule is good. And we could argue that this is a terrible rule and we need to change the rule, and let's discuss that. Then we can also discuss, was it implemented correctly, right? And I just think we're at a place where there's 47,000 camera angles with a million people on Twitter, all with an opinion about something. And so it just gets over everything, overcovered, overanalyzed. Like the one that bothers me, and you brought up NFL and college football. The one that bothers me, though, is basketball, college basketball in particular, where if you're dribbling a ball and you're going to the rim, and when a guy used to knock the ball out of your hand when you were dribbling and it went out of bounds, it was just automatically your ball, right? Like if we're playing a pickup game, and I go right around D-Mace, of course, because he's got slow feet. He's never really had fast feet. And he just knocks the ball out of my hand. It doesn't matter if it goes off my finger. It's going to be my ball, right? Like that's every single pickup game in America. But when you slow it down and you've got 36 high-definition cameras and you're looking at it went off his fingernail after the other guy knocked it out. I just think we're at a place where there's just so much analysis. I don't know what the answer is. I think we've crossed over into like this I don't know. When a blade of grass, like the out of bounds calls now in the NFL and in college football, where like did the heel touch, right?
Mm-hmm.
It looks like his heel didn't touch or it did touch. I think Aaron Jones got called for this on Sunday night.
So you think all the technology is actually working adversely for sports fans?
I think there's a point of diminishing returns. I think it's good for us, but then it can get to the point where it's a little too much.
Now, I get it. These referees and umpires live don't have the same vantage point that we do, mm-hmm. and these athletes are ridiculously quick, so it's all split-second reactions.
Right.
But I'm at a point now where I don't know how you'd ever implement it, and I try not to say silly, stupid things, but I would entertain the idea of robots.
Well, baseball's toyed with that idea.
Like I don't want, like, oh, it's the human element. Screw the human element. Get it right.
I mean, robots can get it wrong, too, as we've seen. You know, things can happen, malfunctions, anything. It can go wrong.
Don't say that about a robot. It'll take you out.
We just saw that, you know, a face recognition thing, I think one of the companies were using, it was totally wrong. They were using this face recognition thing on players during a game, and the face recognition was recognizing these guys as criminals. Wanted. They were wanted.
What?
Yes, I think it was either Microsoft. It was either Microsoft or it was one of the big tech companies, and they were trying out this. They're trying out this new face recognition thing for police officers.
Huge in China.
Yeah, you recognize, so I can tell.
Used for very different reasons.
If you've committed a crime or not, because the cameras pick you up on at every angle. And what was happening was they were using it during games. And they were, you know, using this face recognition on players. And then it would come back and say these guys had warrants for their arrest.
Every single one of them.
And these guys have never been in trouble in their life. So there's a flaw. There's flawedness to everything, whether it be a robot or obviously a human.
I don't think here's a good. We don't need facial recognition surgery, though, to call balls and strikes.
No.
Technology.
But my thing is, it's if
surgery.
You are for, and not you, because you, a lot of your stuff is because of gambling, so you kind of like go back.
But see, now I bet on the Astros, but I thought the Nationals were being screwed.
Yeah.
So,
but you want it to be called fair,
yes,
and true.
Just get the call right.
Is if I am the guy, if the Tennessee Titans, if Corey Davis makes a catch on the sideline, and it's very close. And if the ref comes back and say he caught the ball, then I, along with the rest of the Titan fans and the team, is like, yay, 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 yay. But if it comes back and say he didn't catch the ball, then it's like, oh, man, that's totally messed up. Man, they should get rid of replay. You can't please everybody.
Right.
They are doing the – I mean, listen, there are some egregious calls. I get it. There are. But this is what we've been screaming for years. Get replay. We need to get more science into the game. We need to do this. And now that they got it and it's getting better, now we're saying no.
This is too much.
We've had replay for a handful of years now in different sports, and it's evolved, and there's more stuff that's reviewable.
But you're not going to please everybody.
But we've had social media now for 10 years, so I know it's different from, quote, back in the day. I just feel like over the last calendar year, it's worse than it was two years ago, five years ago.
But here's the thing.
I just don't know if you can definitively say that.
Here's the thing.
It just feels like there's more egregious mistakes.
You might be right. You might be right. You might be right. But you know what?
Just ask the Saints.
As much as the NFL, NHL, MLB, NBA... they will see all these tweets and they will come out and say, we are trying to get better. They love it. You know why? Because they know you ain't going nowhere. And they want that, because what if they took that away and made everything perfect? Then nobody's complaining. Why do we have Twitter? Why do we have Instagram? We don't need none of that stuff because there's no platform to complain.
I don't think that.
I don't want it perfect. Keep it like it is, because now I can watch you blow a gasket.
But
I love it.
I don't think that the NFL, though, wants the Saints call to be wrong.
No, I'm not saying
the NFL doesn't want that kind of stuff.
I'm saying that was blatant. I'm not talking about the blatant calls. I'm talking about the 50-50 ones where you're going to blow a gasket because you're like, man, Ray Charles could have seen that one.
And the other half.
And then the other half is like, I love it. And the NFL is sitting back and saying, we love this, because they're going back and forth on Twitter,
and
we love it.
I think baseball in particular, because sure as hell ain't nobody watching right now. That's a bigger issue. Right now, nobody's watching this World Series. It's one of the lowest-rated World Series in Nashville history. It's one of the lowest-rated World Series nationally. It's just one of the least-watched series of modern World Series. I think the lowest-watched game ever, I think, was game, like, four. So here's my stance on it is I'm willing to take the mistakes because we have so much technology, the diminishing return stuff we were talking about earlier. I'm willing to take that because I would rather have all the technology than not. So, the other question is tennis and soccer, World Cup and tennis, they use technology and digital information extremely well, mm-hmm. right? A tennis player can go, is it in or out? And we've got digital technology that tells us whether or not the ball was in or out in the line or on the line or off the line.
Because that's tennis is
same
different.
Thing with soccer. I don't know, but why the football? Like, if you can tell me that the tennis ball going 145 miles an hour off of Roger Federer's serve, you can pinpoint to the millimeter where that ball landed, then you can tell me where the football should be freaking spotted using digital technology.
Because,
there's no excuse for that not to be happening in the NFL.
Here's the deal why. It's because if on second and whatever inches, and they don't get it, and they go back in the replay, and they say, well, we're going to put it here instead of here. Then at least now I have two downs to get the first down. It should be relatively easy if it's an inch away, mm-hmm. probably less than that. In tennis, no, you don't get a second chance because that point goes to that person. So it's to me, tennis, you can't compare tennis and how they do their sport with, say, the NFL.
But you're still saying it's okay to be wrong. And it's not okay to be wrong.
It's okay. Who says that they're wrong?
What I'm saying is physically, if the call is wrong, like, again, the reason we have the World Cup technology with the soccer ball, right, mm-hmm. and the tennis ball in tennis is that it's digitally tracked, right? It's tracked like the EA Sports.
And if they don't
track.
Get it right, that costs me a point.
But it's right every time. So why can't the football be spotted right every time? Why do we even have to go to review on the goal line when we can digitally spot the ball through computers like we do in tennis and soccer and know 100%? And that way we know that it's crossed the plane or not. There are certain things we could do. Again, in baseball, and this is the weird one, we could spot the strike zone digitally through computers and get strikes and balls right every time. Baseball fan will tell you they don't want that.
Well, that's what K-Zone does
exactly.
on television.
You could have the K-Zone and just get rid of the umpire. You don't need the umpire.
If I'm a baseball fan, which I'm really not, I don't want it. I don't. And in football, I don't want to chip in the ball. Even though they might end up doing that anyway, I don't want to chip in the ball. To me, it takes away the argument. Whether it be right or wrong, because they're wrong on a lot of other stuff and they're right on a lot of other things. It just takes away the arguments that the good arguments that you can have on Twitter or on one of these shows.
Dude, I would trade arguments for the ball being spotted right every time.
I don't want to trade it because I want to see people in a good fashion go at it. Like, no, that wasn't. Yes, that was.
Yeah, you definitely don't read Twitter.
I want to see that, man. It's just in the NFL. I think they love it. They love it.
I just want to see people argue with like robot referees.
Exactly.
Like, I want to see Coach Ed Ogeron versus a robot referee.
Robot referee.
Will Muschamp against the Terminator. Who wins? 737-1025. We'll get calls on this if you want to jump in. I think officiating, referees, umpires, I think it's at an all-time low. 737-1025. Your calls when we come back here on Morning Drive. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, talking about the World Series umpire blunder last night and just a larger conversation on officiating, referees, umpires in sports. We see it every Saturday in the SEC. We see it in the NFL. We saw it in Major League Baseball last night. Some sports, Braden, you mentioned, they get it right. Like sports like tennis, they say, you know what? We've got the computerized data. I don't care. We don't need to go to replay and let a human being interpret it.
And different fans in different sports feel differently, and that's okay. Baseball fans don't want, K-Zone to call balls and strikes. They want it to be human element. It's bizarre. I understand why they like it that way, but it's different. It's different. And we'll get to the fact that no one's watching this series either in just a minute.
737-1025. James, next on Morning Drive. James, you go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, James.
So I have 2 points to bring up. I agree with Derek Mason. There's always going to be, official error. But when you change a rule to where you can challenge pass interference, how do you get to pick and choose when you enforce that? I think that's one thing that they're doing wrong.
No, I agree with you.
Hang on, James. What do you mean, like, pick and choose when they enforce it? What do you mean?
You mean pick and choose what you can challenge and what you can't?
When the coach throws the challenge flag and there's obvious pass interference on the TV screen, but then they come back and say that they're not going to overturn it, when you can see that there's pass interference, but it's not a critical moment, so they're not going to overturn it.
Well, they have basically said that unless it is without a question an egregious miss, they're not going to overturn
it. Well, in the Lions and Green Bay game, that was a pass interference, but they didn't call it. My thing is, that's one rule that the NFL
They need to take away.
They need to just completely. It was a reactionary thing because of what the Saints went through. They need to now get rid of that whole thing because
I'm cool with that.
Unless it's egregious, they're not going to change it, and they're not looking to change these calls no matter what.
Which basically means the rule isn't a thing.
Exactly. Right? So just take it out. I hate that rule.
I'm just with you. The idea, all they've done is create another situation for people to second guess decision making. And the good news is, and this is the good news for fans, the good news is the NFL has made it so clear that there's really not, like, at least they're consistently
not calling it.
Right. They're consistently not changing it for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody sort of understands that unless it's, like, wildly egregious and obvious, you shouldn't challenge. So as long as every coach knows the standard is pretty fair, even if the standard is skewed way far one direction.
And I think that's why Vrabel didn't challenge a few of those calls.
Like, especially in the first couple games, where he knew something we all didn't, which is they've clearly been told, we ain't changing these calls unless it's obvious, like the Saints-Rams, which actually is probably the right way to go about doing it. We actually all probably agree with the NFL in being extremely sort of strict on changing rules. If that's the way you're going to be, though, why have it in the first place? Just get rid of it. I'm with you, Derek. I didn't like it in the first place because if you're going to start doing it for pass interference, why aren't you doing it for holding? Why aren't you doing it for anything? These are subjective calls that happen in the minute, you know, in the split second. I don't know. Like, you're going to get some PI calls wrong. You're going to get some holding calls wrong. It's just the nature of the game.
7371025. CJ is next on Morning Drive. CJ, you go ahead.
Good morning, guys. It was brought up earlier, you know, the different sports like tennis and soccer and how, you know, those particular situations get right all the time and why not football. But you got to look at the elements that football has compared to those different sports. When you're looking at a ball getting kicked or a ball getting hit with a racket, it's singularity where it's by itself, where a ball's being carried by somebody, then getting tackled by two or three other bodies. It's hard to perfectly pinpoint where that ball is going to be spotted. That's why it's not going to be the same as tennis, where the ball is literally getting hit and it's by itself going towards the line out of bounds. So that's where you're looking at the different factors that are in play when you're talking about football. That's why it's going to be different compared to the other sports that you're looking at.
CJ, I think that's a fair question to ask. But again, I'm not a computer guy, so I don't know how this would work. But again, if the only thing that was being registered by the computer system was the field and the football, I don't know.
And the bodies shouldn't factor.
The bodies
in,
aren't a factor, right? So I don't like.
But of all the things that are bad,
if the sensors are only in the ball, I know where you're about to go.
I actually think they do a pretty good job spotting the football.
And I agree. I think spotting the football is one of the craziest art forms in all of sports. And I think the referees do a spectacular job.
The only time I would love to see that is on
good a job they do.
Is on punts. When the punts are kicked out of bounds.
Yes.
Yeah, and you never
see the one guy just running up the sideline going,
when is he
going
to stop? When is he going to stop? When is he going to stop? Oh, okay, he stopped. Like, how did he know?
And then he goes 2 yards too.
Yeah.
He goes 2 yards too far, and then he looks at his other buddy. He's like, oh, I'm going to come back this way.
It's like, how did you figure that out? That's the only time I would love to see that inside of a ball to say, okay, I know exactly where it went out.
But look at the Tennessee-South Carolina game. How many times was there a review around the goal line and we weren't kind of 100% sure? Like, I thought I knew on each one of those calls what it was supposed to be, but, like, I don't know officially. Well, if you have a plane and a digitally, you know, tracked football on a digitally tracked field and the players don't have any sensors inside their bodies at all, I don't know why the football wouldn't be picked up by the – again, I'm not a robotics computer guy here, so I'm just – you know, I see a tennis ball going 150 miles an hour and we can pinpoint it to the millimeter, and a soccer ball to the millimeter with a bunch of bodies around it. I don't know why we can't figure out where the football. Now, to your point, it's also not something that we necessarily need. I think they do a pretty good job.
737-1025. Cody, next on Morning Drive. Cody, you go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So, my question, I know you guys are talking about football, flags, and penalties. Last night's game in the World Series, with Turner being called out at first base, I've played baseball all my life, and I just got confused by the call. Can I hang up and listen to you guys explain what they called and why?
Well, yeah. I mean, Cody, they called him for interference, and when he busted it out of the box, he clearly looked like he was violating the rule.
Yeah.
But the last few feet, he veered back into the correct path to the point where I don't know what else he could have done other than tiptoe down the line and just barely graze the edge of the baseline.
But if you're not allowed to run inside the baseline, you're not allowed to run inside the baseline.
I guess it's like the cause and effect thing.
But they're calling him out for interference with the ball, which is at the end of the run where he was back in the correct path.
But what's the rule book say?
But the thing is that it's all a cause and effect. If you didn't do this, then that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Well, they feel like if you hadn't run outside of the baseline,
you wouldn't be there in the first place.
Exactly, you wouldn't be there in the first place. That's where you went wrong. Even though toward the end he started to get back in, well, he's already messed up because you went outside the baseline.
The good news is it didn't affect the outcome of the game.
Yeah.
Like, if the Astros had won last night, I think this is a much bigger story.
Oh, yeah, because they're world champions.
And they're the world champions, and we're going, wait a second, this was a questionable call, let's say. I don't know. There's this World Series is I've enjoyed it because it's the first time I believe in history that every road team has won every game. We have a game 7. There's a lot to like about this, right? You got Greinke and Scherzer going tonight for a winner take all World Series in the final game of a season. Like, it's as if you're a baseball fan, you're all over this. So the problem is that the country's not paying attention. They're not watching. All they care about is two chicks behind home plate and game number 4 or whatever it was, game 5.
Which we will get to that story as well coming up in a little bit. A lot of people on hold to talk about the officiating. Guys, we can't get to all the calls right now. Derek Mason, head coach of Vanderbilt, is going to join us. We'll try to get back into this conversation in the 9 o'clock hour if you want to jump back in, if you're still around. So apologies for that. But Derek Mason is coming up next. But right now, got to tell you about my buddies at Twisted Tea. When you unwind, you need to unwind with a twist. Twisted Tea Original is the one that got the last tailgate party going. A hard iced tea that made real brewing tea become even popular. Twisted Tea Original is refreshing, smooth, delicious, and of course, it's a little twisted. Twisted Tea, half and half, the hard iced tea with lemonade flavor. And if you like lemonade, the Twisted Tea half and half is for you. It combines classic flavors of iced tea and lemonade with just a little kick. Twisted Tea has a 5% alcohol by volume with no carbonation. It is a flavorful, refreshing alternative to premium light beer. So sit back, enjoy, watch some bad officiating, and take in some good Twisted Tea. It is Morning Drive, 7:33 live here on a Wednesday edition of the show. Derek Mason, head coach of Vanderbilt, will join us coming up in just a moment.
Is that the best Marvin Gaye song of all time?
I don't know.
I think that's a hot take by me. That's my favorite. That's my favorite Marvin Gaye song of all time.
Marvin Gaye power rankings tomorrow.
Number one. That's my number one. I know there's a lot of bigger. There's bigger hits out there, right? Let's Get It On, whatever. But like that one right there.
We could do a list. We haven't done a list in a long time. I love lists.
Marvin Gaye mock draft.
Yes,
I like that.
Not Rudy Gay. Not Marvin Bagley. But Marvin Gaye. You like that?
No, actually, I don't.
Not Marvin, Marvin, Marvis, Marvin Hagler.
Marvelous
Marvin Hagler.
Not Marvin Harrison.
That's such a good song.
All right, so here's what we got coming up. 1 hour from now, Sean Henry, Nashville Predator CEO and president, will join us at 8:30. We've got Stick to Sports coming up at 8:45, a loaded 8 o'clock hour, which will include another installment of the D-Mace Dissection. As our boy Derek Mason will go behind the All-22, and then also Adam Vingan's going to join us at 9:30 this morning. The head coach of Vanderbilt is with us right now, Coach Derek Mason. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, man. By the way, man, sorry I missed the Marvin Gaye, but that's okay. Thank you for throwing it on anyway.
No problem. We knew you were coming on. We put a little Marvin on. It'd be go time.
Your favorite Marvin Gaye song is what?
Let's Get It On.
Exactly.
Simple man. I like it.
So
how was the bye week, Coach?
Yeah. Did you enjoy the bye week? Did you get away for a little bit? How'd you take in the week off?
You know what, man? It was about work. You know, we got back, man. We had two good days, man. We had a strong Tuesday, a strong Wednesday, and we gave these guys Thursday, Friday, you know, Saturday off, and then we came back on Sunday, and then practiced. And it was a 65-minute practice, but it was, you know, geared towards South Carolina special teams, and some offense and some defense. It was good work. Put these guys in pads. These guys responded well. Came back yesterday. Had a good day. And now we're sitting on Wednesday, which is, you know, Wild Out Wednesday. It's a work day. Let's get it.
Derek, you said you just mentioned South Carolina and special teams in the same sentence. That certainly was a major problem for South Carolina last week against Tennessee as they capitalized on and scored two touchdowns. Do you see, you know, when you scout a team, special teams is always sort of forgotten amongst fans in particular. Do you see huge opportunities in the special teams very often, or is that something that maybe just presented itself because South Carolina just had a few big mistakes?
I think special teams is always a huge part of what, you know, like we as coaches, you know, maybe try to, you know, prep for. I know, you know, Coach Muschamp is probably, you know, been looking at the film and you know, emphasizing, you know, special teams this week. I mean, it's always got to be an emphasis, but, you know, what happens in ball games sometimes is that guys let down their guard, and that's when special teams can change games. You know, obviously to have a punt block, a punt returned, that's not necessarily what you're looking for. And what that comes down to at times is a guy, you know, just letting down in protection, or I mean, a guy not staying in his lane properly, and not closing to the ball carrier. Because when you watch the punt return came right down the middle, and most of the time that's not where you want a punt returner to go, because that's the fastest way to the end zone is a straight line. So, you know, I'm sure they're working on it, because I know we're detailing it. And you know, if they give us an opportunity in special teams, we're going to take it.
Now, Coach, you guys have played seven games, so roughly just beyond the half point mark, yeah, with your team. You had a bye, which is good at the half point mark, because now you can get guys healthy. What have you seen from your team? Because typically this time of year, you either see a team get rejuvenated and they're ready to go, and they're ready to, you know, this last half of the season they want to play it even better than they did the first half. Or you see a team that's just dead tired, and it's like, man, how can I get these guys going? What have you seen from your team in particular? Or I'm sure they're more so on the, hey, we're rejuvenated, we're ready to go.
Right. I would agree with that assessment. I think, you know, getting the win versus Missouri heading into the bye was huge. You know, a lot of times, man, you want to keep that momentum going, and instead of having a bye. But you know what? The bye came at the right time. You know, man, we had some guys injured, obviously, you know, like our quarterback, you know, man, Mo Hassan was injured in that ball game. And I mean, Kenny Hebert was injured in that ball game. We needed to, you know, heal up a little bit. And I thought, you know, that's what the bye gave us time to do. But you also want to keep your edge. You know, in this day and age, you're trying to talk about repeatability and make sure, man, that your guys understand, you know, how we got the win, how we got there, what did it take. And so, I mean, it's a constant reminder for us as coaches that, you know, there is a formula, you know, I mean, to what you're trying to do. But you got to make sure, too, I mean, that you just continue to encourage, motivate, and fine-tune exactly where you're at. I think these guys are rested. I think that's what we've seen in terms of their legs coming back. We just got to make sure now, you know, like we can become a one-take team. You know, man, you can make a mistake and then we get it adjusted, but we can't have many mistakes. And that's what I want from this team going forward. We got to be a one-take team.
Coach, I think a lot of people on the outside look at South Carolina and they talk about Ryan Helinski and his story, but I want to go to the other side of the ball. That South Carolina defensive line is very talented. Kinlaw is an absolute can't miss, I think, as an NFL prospect. How do you go about protecting the quarterback this week, establishing the run, when you have a South Carolina defensive front led by Kinlaw that is just so talented?
Yeah, you know, you look at their guys up front. I mean, man, they've got three NFL guys on that front. You know, Wanham, has been outstanding as well. But Kinlaw is you know, a man amongst boys when you watch him play. I mean, he's powerful. He's long. You know, we're going to have to try to put hands on him. You know, two sets of hands on him, not one. And we're going to have to try to, you know, find ways, man, because he is disruptive in the run game. But we've got to do some things to him. I mean, you know, some trap blocks, you know, man, maybe, you know, man, some back blocks, you know, man, some double teams, you know, here and there in the pass game. We've got to find ways to sort of run at him and when the ball is away from him, because he can be so disruptive, you know, and find opportunities to chip him too. I mean, that's sort of what has to happen with those types of guys. They demand or command attention. And, you know, man, for us, we understand that this front's going to, you know, man, attack us, you know, man, in the run game, and they're going to present some problems in the pass game. We just got to make sure, man, we keep our quarterback upright and we continue to, you know, stick to our plan. No matter what they do, man, we still got to stick with what our plan is. We just got to find creative ways to do it.
Now, Coach, I would, you know, I mean, obviously – you've been on this station, you've come on every week, and you've answered the tough questions that we've thrown at you, and you've been great about it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I got to ask the question. It's hard to, you know, when dealing with your student athletes, it's hard to kind of keep them off of social media and keep that circle around them so they don't hear the negative noise.
Right.
Obviously, there's stories coming out about you and the coaching staff. How do you – you know, kind of keep yourself isolated from stuff like that?
You know, but the biggest thing is, man, I got a man upstairs, this man that's on my side. I put my faith in that, and really at the end of the day, I'm charged to lead young men. So I don't pay attention to that. I mean, I've always been able to try to, you know, like sort of maintain my focus and be where my feet are. And in doing that, I don't have time to worry about the outside when I'm responsible for, you know, like 110 young men and their mm-hmm. parents expect me to take care of the things that these young men do every day. So I think, you know, like with that responsibility, it makes it easy for me, and I'm truthful mm-hmm. and transparent with my team. I think that's what a lot of coaches don't do nowadays. You know, like coaches don't want to be transparent. Hey, listen, if it's out there, you know what you do? I mean, if somebody tells me something, because I don't read a whole lot, mm-hmm. somebody tells me something, I just address it with my team so that they know and understand, you know, exactly where we're at and where I'm coming from. And you know what? I mean, a lot of time, man, you can alleviate the pink elephant in the room. All you do is speak to the truth, and then these guys continue to ride, and that's what we're going to do.
Coach, always a pleasure. Best of luck this week against South Carolina. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Hey, let's anchor down.
You got it. Derek Mason, head coach of Vandy. The Doors, about a 15-point road dog in Columbia this week.
Well, UT was a what?
4-point underdog at home.
Yeah, at home. That would have made them, what, if they're on a road over a touchdown?
It would have been like a 10-point line, which is insane, considering they won by 20.
Exactly. So, I mean, it can be done. If they play the way they played against Missouri, then I think they win. But if they go back to playing the way that they played prior to the Missouri game, it's not going to be a good outcome. So hopefully the bye week has helped them rejuvenate, got them healthy, and now they can make a push run.
South Carolina is better than UNLV.
Yeah.
And they're playing in their own stadium. So
I do wonder, though, if they would have got South Carolina last week instead of the bye, just how different it would be. Like, does this kill the momentum? Yeah, you get healthy, but do you lose some of that confidence?
No, not when you're 2-5, right? If you pick up a win as a 20-point underdog, I think you're okay going into the bye week. I think you're fine with the bye, especially when he talked about his quarterback being, you know, if Mo Asan is hurt and he's not ready to play, and now he is, I think you take that chance. South Carolina also, by the way, took some lumps mm-hmm. and put some bad stuff on film for Coach Mason to look at against Tennessee. So I think there's just as many advantages as there are disadvantages, probably.
Speaking of college football, time for silly underdogs. You pick three college football underdogs. Maybe you take Vanderbilt plus 15. That you think will win outright this Saturday. Weekly winners, how about this week? You're going to get a pair of tickets to the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl at Nissan Stadium on Monday, December the 30th. Always a pretty entertaining bowl game, so hit up thegamenational.com or the ESPN Game National mobile app. And play today. Silly Underdog Picks brought to you by the Volunteer Hose and Gasket. One piece of information on college football and then also domination against a rival. That's next on Morning Drive. 7:48 Morning Drive rolling on live here on a Wednesday edition of the show. D-Mace Dissection coming up in 12 minutes. So a piece of information yesterday coming out in the world of college football. I think we as a show, I think a lot of people in the city that are certainly hardcore college football fans in the college football nation has been looking forward to Alabama LSU due to the developments largely of LSU becoming so ridiculously good and modernized on offense this year, boys, the line was released yesterday. Alabama, an 8-point favorite at home against LSU, and quickly,
wow,
it dropped to 6.5.
I'm surprised that's not a pick 'em.
I'll take LSU minus the 8, or plus the 8, please.
Yeah,
I already did.
Give me that. I'm taking LSU.
Give me that.
I don't understand. That is a huge. 6 points is big.
LSU's defense isn't very good.
I know, but Alabama's defense, I mean.
It's going to be 41-38.
Yeah.
If I want to, I would pick the over-under.
Well, yeah, of course, that's what you do every Friday.
70-some points, I would pick the
what
over.
What is the actual, do you see what's the actual
total? They don't have a total yet, probably because they don't know about Tua.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, they know that that's the number that's going to get hit the hardest, right? Everyone's going to take the over.
Mm-hmm. They can't set it high enough for me not to bet it.
From a total standpoint?
From a total standpoint.
There's not a number where you take the under.
I'm taking the under. It's like a Big 12 game.
If I said 82 points, would you take the under?
Yes.
So found the number.
I'm looking at LSU and what they were able to do against a Florida defense.
Yeah.
And they struggled against, Auburn. I think a lot of that really had to do with the weather.
Auburn's really good.
And Auburn's defense is really, really good. Auburn's defense is better than Alabama's.
Their defensive line is nasty.
And they still were able to put up points. They didn't, they didn't score 40 points, but they were able to put up points. They should have had more points than what they had. They were down there enough times. But against Alabama, I think they're going to be able to put up points, man. I
think so, too.
To me, right now, I'm not saying who's going to be the better, pro or whatnot. Well, I think ultimately this draft, in this draft alone, I think Joe Burrow's going to be the better pro.
That's a hot take.
Joe Burrow has been the better quarterback than any. Not to say he's better by a huge margin, because he's not. Because all these quarterbacks are so close. Yeah. It's pathetic. But I think he's been the best. He just looks like he has, under any circumstance, every circumstance, he has total command of what's going on. He looks like a pro quarterback playing in a college level.
That's a good way to describe it. There's not a moment that he doesn't feel like he knows what he's doing.
Exactly.
So here's what's interesting about LSU versus Bama in general. LSU has trailed in the third quarter at home twice. Mm-hmm. So you could argue that's a bad thing, that their defense has given up points and that they've been trailing, right? To both Florida and Auburn, they were trailing midway through the third quarter, losing at home. You also have to then argue, well, they're battle-tested. They've been in battles, and they've come back and won relatively easily. They covered the spread against Florida. They won by 14. Mm-hmm. They were down 28-21, and they rattled off 3 straight touchdowns to win the game. And then, of course, against Auburn, they were basically up 10 with a few minutes to go, and Auburn scored late to make it look like a closer game and then had the onside kick. But largely, that was those two fourth quarters were far easier for LSU. So it's kind of
plus the Texas game.
And no question against Texas. They are battle tested, meaning they've been in wars and come out as the victor. Bama hasn't been through that at all. Mm-mm. But it also means that Bama is destroying people. So which one is better? Which one would you rather be going into a game? I think you can make cases for both sides. Like, hey, we're so dominant that we're winning by 45 points a game. Ohio State is in that world. They haven't really been tested yet. Clemson's, we've seen them go through a battle against North Carolina. They've been tested. And LSU's been tested more than anybody, in part because their schedule is tougher than everybody's. But you also were losing in the third quarter. Alabama can't say that, right? Now, the Tennessee game is interesting, right? Because Alabama was in a battle with Tennessee in theory. They had to get a goal line stand to sort of pull away from Tennessee, which is, I can't believe, is a thing I'm saying out loud.
Until Jared Garantano decided to grow a brain.
Yeah. Or remove his brain.
Or remove him, put it on ice.
Yeah, one of the two. I think this will be the highest scoring game in the history of the series. I think this will be of course that means it'll probably end up being like 11-10. But
you remember CBS decided this past summer to end a 6 or 7 year stretch of having this game in prime time at night.
It was like a 12 year stretch. I think it was even longer than that, maybe.
I want to say
2011 game was in prime time.
And 2010 was a day game.
Okay.
But 2011 was the first night game. I'm wondering if CBS can't flex it into night games because they already used Georgia-Notre Dame as their primetime night game. I wonder if they have regrets about that. Because you would love to get LSU-Bama in primetime.
Oh, maybe. Of course.
This year.
Yes, but you're also...
But hindsight's 2020.
Your 2:30 window is pretty salt. It's a pretty good window for college football. And you know it's going to be dark in the second half. It'll be nighttime. You know, come around like for the fourth quarter, it'll be dark, and mm-hmm. it always looks better at night. So, I would guess that they probably regret that. But who saw LSU's offense coming like this?
Oh, apparently Derek Mason did. So he's been touting Joe Burrow since May.
Don't say who saw.
We all thought LSU was going to be good. You did not see Heisman Trophy for the quarterback.
What have I been saying about
you
Joe
Burrow? You said they were going to win.
I've been on his island, and I've only said they're going to win because of who? Joe Burrow. Okay. I saw the kid last year. I said, this guy is good. I've been on his island along with the rest of the LSU fans. We've all been on his island. So.
Listen, he had 15 touchdowns, 2 interceptions last year, and they won 10 games. Everybody thought he was good. No one thought he was going to throw for 500 yards a game.
Listen, I got it on record. It's on tape.
You picked LSU to beat Bama.
It's on tape. I said LSU. Watch out for LSU.
In July.
Because of Joe Burrow.
We got to go back to the archives.
Yeah, go back to the pick it up.
I'm not knocking what you're saying. You had LSU. You've been on LSU since
picking
the beginning.
Joe Burrow. Hey. I'm riding with Joe Burrow all the way to the NFL.
You know
I hope the Titans draft him.
You know I love you, right?
For a quarterback.
You know I love you, right? Uh-huh. And I think I'm pretty objective. I told you I bet the Astros, but I thought the Nationals got screwed. Uh-huh. I'm on record right now. I already put my bet in for LSU plus uh-huh. 8. Okay. But there's a sick, twisted part of me, a very dark, sadistic place that I don't go to too often, that uh-huh. I would be okay losing money if it meant Alabama just boat races LSU, come in here Monday morning, and I will be insufferable.
Well, the problem is, Derek, we'd have to deal with Marquise too.
Exactly.
Like, it's
absolutely
not just one of them; it's two of these knuckleheads.
Quickly,
all right, roll tide, Derek, roll tide.
Hey D, how about that Joe Burrow cat? Huh?
3 interceptions last night. What do you think about that?
How'd he do? Yeah. Looked like Tannehill with the Dolphins.
Oh my goodness,
mean spirited.
Predators beat the Blackhawks 3-0 last night. Benino with the hat trick. Pecorine, you know, I don't know if he's ever going to lose a game in regulation. The dude is just ridiculous. 7-0-1 this year.
Best start ever in franchise history for a goaltender. He ties Thomas Vokoun in 05-06, who went 7-0-1. So it's the best start in franchise history by a goaltender. You could argue Yossi and Ellis is the best start in franchise history for a defense pairing as far as scoring goes, creating offense. Oh, by the way, he signed a $72-plus million contract yesterday. Congratulations to Roman Yossi. And that's the most dominant performance I've seen all season from the Preds. Start to finish, they played with purpose. 50-plus shots, almost got to a franchise record in shots. I think 55 was the record. They didn't quite get there last night. And the shot differential was just off in the 30s, which is insane. Almost a franchise record there, too. So I thought they played with purpose from the first shift, and I think that's what you've wanted to see. What's the next evolution of this team is not trailing in the first and second period all the time and having to come back to win games. It's great mm-hmm. that you can do that, like we just talked about with LSU. But you want to know that you've got that sort of resiliency, but you also want to dominate first periods and second periods too. So good to see them go start to finish, complete showing last night.
Do you guys, because we were all guessing, you know, for months, is Yossi going to get 9? Is he going to get 9.5? I think we all agreed yesterday we would cut the limit off at 10. Anything above 10 would be maybe a little excessive. Never in a million years did I think they would get him at 9.059 and whatever it was.
Basically 9. Yeah.
Does David Poile just bring players in and their agents in and give them like a pill or a little potion and just hypnotize them and get them to take less?
I think.
Like, Roman, you will take 9.
I think that would be illegal.
In this situation, he knew he couldn't just do that. He knew he just couldn't say, Roman, here's 9. Take it.
Well, here's 9 plus a no movement clause.
Yeah, the no movement clause.
What did it. The no movement clause. It's, okay, yes, we gave Duchesne this. We're going to have to give Yossi all of it if we want to keep him. Because 9 is just not going to keep him. Now, 9 and we can never move you, that's going to keep him. And that's what they had to do. So, yes, he worked. Yes, I think that was always in his back pocket. Like, if worst comes to worst, I can use this no move clause. Yeah. I think that's probably what was the, you know, sticking point. You know, should I use it? When should I use it? Can I continue to push? I can't push no more. They're not going to sign this $9 million deal if I don't give that no move clause. And he had to take out his back pocket. It was like, break in case of emergency. Yep. Well, he broke it, and he had to give it up.
And we know Yossi has said openly, he said it yesterday, he and his family want to be in Nashville and play for the Predators for the rest of his career. And now Yossi has sort of complete control over that. It's an 8-year guaranteed contract with a no movement clause.
He's
that,
here.
That doesn't give it to go buy your 59 jerseys, folks, because
he's here.
You don't have to worry about him getting moved.
He ain't going nowhere.
Coming up next, hour number 3 will feature the D-Mace dissection. 85 went into the lab last night. He put on his coat. He threw the goggles on. Scalpel is out. We will have the All-22 breakdown coming up next. Stay there.